Welcome to The Tome, episode 10. This episode is going to be a little bit different. First of all, you'll notice that I'm doing a slightly different format here, where I'm talking a little bit before you hear the intro music. Something I'm trying out to see if I like the sound of that a little bit more. Also, I kind of been slacking lately. I've kind of been off the ball. Real life sort of caught up with me in a lot of ways, and since I do this as a hobby, the Tome sort of took a backseat for a little while. But I'm trying to get myself back into the routine and get caught back up on things. And I have continued reading in that time, so you can rest assured that as I complete things, I will continue to get shows out. But I am behind on my Dragon Magazine reviews. So in this episode, I will be reviewing Dragon Magazine issue 352 and 353. And I'm going to try a little bit different format, a little bit quicker, a little less scripted, maybe a little more conversational. We'll see how it goes. And we'll see if that's better or worse. In any case, I, as usual, am Jeff Greiner, and you are listening to Welcome back. The Tome is a D&D game book review podcast focused on official D&D content. You might see some subtle differences in this show. First of all, it's a little later than I expected. I'm sorry. Life sort of caught up with me, and it occurred to me, I just got Dragon issue number 353 in the mail today. I should probably get a podcast out for 352 soon. So I'm sorry for the tardiness, and I know it might not be as useful of a show for you since it is later. But there's still some things in there that I think are interesting and worth talking about, so I'm going to go ahead and get this out on 352 now. The other thing is that the way that I've put the show together has sort of developed over time, and originally I sort of had some bullet points and talked through as the mood struck me, I guess, for most of the show, and then I got some advice that maybe I tighten it up a little bit and script it a little bit more. And so I've been scripting it pretty word for word for a while now. And now I'm starting to get some feedback that maybe I should add it some more conversational sort of feel to it. Plus, I'm getting a few more people saying maybe I should rethink the idea of the Dragon Magazine episodes. So what I'm thinking I might do is I'm thinking this time around, I'm just going to do, instead of the in-depth, highly scripted show for this Dragon Magazine, I'm going to do a quick, pretty much completely unscripted episode of Dragon. See how it goes. See if I like the way it goes. See if you guys give me any positive or negative feedback on that. So I am going to do that this time around and just see if it's more fun for you guys or if it's more fun for me or if it has any more or less value in it. But I'm just going to do a quick walkthrough this time around with less of a script to it. See how it goes. As always, I love and welcome viewer feedback. Whether you want to write a guest review for me to read on the show, whether you want to respond to something that I've said, or whether you want to just give me feedback on how to make the show better, that'd be awesome. I love hearing from you guys. The email address is thetomeshow@gmail.com. And since we're on the subject of listener email, let's go to the listener email right now. The first email is from Jake, who's emailed the show several times before. And Jake says, I listened to it and I don't have any suggestions for feedback other than make it longer. The longer, the better. 9 hours is good. I considered creating another 30 email accounts and sending similar messages from everyone, but decided against it. It would be annoying to make everyone. Signed, Jake. So Jake's suggesting that I put together a longer show. I've always been pretty consistent with my desire to keep the show between 20 and 30 minutes. I don't think I want to go too much longer than that, as much for my own sanity as for the fact that when I listen to podcasts, it's hard for me to dedicate more than 20 to 30 minutes to a show. But I do like to listen to them all at one time if I can. 1 hour is usually the maximum, and there's very few shows that I will listen to that if they go longer than an hour. But the shorter the show, the more likely I am to listen to it because it dedicates less of my time. I have a lot of podcasts I listen to. So that's sort of the idea behind me keeping the podcast at about 20 to 30 minutes. I also had a couple of comments show up on the website. Some people left some comments on the blog there. I got one here from John M., who is commenting from the episode 8 Expedition to Castle Ravenloft episode, and his comment is, "A great review of a great adventure. I've been running this adventure using Fantasy Grounds virtual tabletop software, and it has been a blast. I had to do what you did in regard to recreating the maps, but it has been worth it. Keep it up." So that's great. I love seeing some people actually apparently visiting the site and using the site. That lets me know a little bit about that, but it also, I enjoyed John's comments about Ravenloft. I'd be interested in seeing how the virtual tabletop software goes. A lot of the gaming I do these days is play by email, with a little bit of tabletop thrown in now and then when I can pull it off. But yes, once again, Ravenloft, a great adventure, well put together, but the maps, while beautiful, become almost useless for the DM just because we can't actually use them with our players. But I did throw out the first set of maps for you guys as my special gift to you. You can find that on the same feed as the podcast, or you can go to the website http://thetome.podbean.com and you can find it there pretty easily. Next up, I have a comment from the Elfin Dwarf. It reads, "Found your show while seeing who else was in the gaming section here at Podbean. You're making me miss my days playing D&D with the guys. My wife, the elf of the Elfin Dwarf, run an off and on campaign that's been going for 3 years, but only playing once every 1.3 months. Great review of the book. I've been running the original Ravenloft module since 6th grade, and I'm excited to hear that it got a facelift for 3.5. I would have liked to hear more comments about how well it runs and where players are likely to struggle, i.e. tips for DMing it, but I guess we need to give you time to run it first. Keep them coming. I've subscribed to your feed, Roarlands of the Elfin Dwarf." The Elfin Dwarf is a podcast also on the Podbean network there, so that would be theelfindwarf.podbean.com if you want to check them out. And thanks. I really enjoy getting that comment too. That's really, it's always really fun to hear from listeners who listen to the show and get inspired to get more involved in gaming. That's really cool. I've been running the old Ravenloft modules for a long, long time also. He says he's been running them since 6th grade. And the 3.5 facelift does look really nice. I'd love to give you some comments on how it runs. I'm actually running two play-by-email versions of it right now, one for my regular group of players and one for Tome listeners. I had a good set of people submit characters, and so we've got a little game going there. As we go through it, if things occur to me, or maybe when it's over with, I'll let you guys know how it goes. Honestly, though, by then, you guys will probably have completely forgotten about it, and we'll be playing D&D version 6 or something at that point, but just because play-by-emails do tend to take a long time to run. Lastly, I have another email from Jake. "I think that a lot of people that listen to your podcast have the Dragon Magazine subscription, and doing the reviews is reading out of a book they have. Other than that, the idea for doing the reviews is great. Jake." This is where I start getting a little confused, Jake. In a previous email, you wanted more and more content, but honestly, if I were to cut out the Dragon Magazine reviews, I would be cutting my content probably in half. But again, I'm still getting about even information from people. Some people really like the Dragon Magazine reviews, some people really don't. It's a continued controversy, but I'm going to continue doing them for now. If it gets to the point that nobody wants to hear them, I'll stop doing it. I am trying out a little bit different format this time around, and I'm actually doing a double Dragon Magazine review just because I've been slacking lately. So, you're going to get two of them today. It's going to be a little less formal, a little more conversational, and maybe that'll suit your needs a little bit, because I'm just going to go really fast. I'm not going to do the in-depth normal reviews. So, hopefully, that suits what you want, or at least is less annoying for you if it's something that you really don't like. So, everybody, thanks for the feedback. And again, if you want to provide feedback for the show or send in a guest review or an audio comment or whatever you want to do to participate in the show to help the show become better, please email thetomeshow@gmail.com or visit the website at http://thetome.podbean.com. And you can leave a comment there, or you can find the email address And you'll also see links to how to dig the site on dig.com or how to vote for us at Podcast Alley. Now I want to throw in a quick word from another show that I've been really getting into lately. So here's a quick promo from them.
Have you ever wanted to build your own world or universe from the ground up and then tell stories in that imagined world? Writers, webcomic and comic artists, filmmakers, game designers, and role players alike build worlds of fantasy, science fiction, and horror that become the reality that their characters inhabit. The Shakespeare and Dragons World Building 101 podcast is an English teacher's perspective about world building, fantasy settings, and game design from a literary point of view. This is the interactive online show about the craft of building fantasy worlds for use in role-playing games and storytelling. In this course, we focus on the goals and methods of creating a rich and immersive fantasy world that others will want to explore, and the story world is a place for composing rich and varied adventures with interesting and appealing characters. Being an English teacher, I unearth the buried and seemingly boring tools of the literary world, such as characterization, themes, and plot structure, and dust them off to reinvent them for today's storytellers and gamers. In this classroom, we might deconstruct films like Star Wars, Serenity, and Seven Samurai to examine dramatic foils, mine Shakespeare for themes for a space opera, or use poetic imagery as a tool to texture our fantasy settings. In other words, this is the English class I wish I had in school. Shakespeare and Dragons is a show for gamers, writers, artists, and dreamers who have never lost the childhood power of make-believe. Come be a part of this interactive show at imaginaryworlds.net, the fantasy network.
Now, into Dragon number 352. Okay, Dragon issue 352 is centered around the writings of an author named China Mayville, who wrote things like Perdido Street Station and The Scar, which could be interesting. I haven't read any of these books. I've never heard of the author, so I'll be interested to see what this has to offer and if it's any good. Real quick, in the first watch section, we get our little news and tidbits here. Upcoming new releases is Dungeonscape, which might be interesting to look at. An interesting choice for a new book in the environment series, since I don't usually think of dungeons as a normal environment, but that'll be interesting. For Eberron, Secrets of Sarlona, which I don't know a whole lot about, but that shows my weakness and my lack of knowledge of Eberron. So if you know more about it, I'd love to hear what you think. And then also, the start of a new three-part series of adventures, this one called Barrow of the Forgotten King. Beyond that, I don't see a lot of announcements in the first watch section that really gets me excited. The new Lord of the Rings online game gets a quick little tribute in here, I guess, along with the game Lair for the PS3. Both of which look really cool, and both of which I am not probably going to be spending the money on, since I don't own a PS3, and I don't usually have enough time to do a lot of online gaming these days. But again, if you've played those games, let me know how they are, so I can let the listeners know. But then they get right into these to a rather large series of articles centered around this author, China Mayville. And I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly. If I'm not, again, let me know. They start off with a quick little interview, I guess, with the author, which is actually really interesting, getting into how did he come up with the ideas, how did he come up with the setting, and what is his process like as an author. I found it very interesting, only 2 pages, but just about right for what I wanted. And then it gets into an article called The Boss Log Gazetteer by Wolfgang Bauer, illustrated by John Gravato, and cartography by Robert Lazzaretti. And this is basically a rather long and extensive gazetteer explaining what this city is like, New Crobuzon, which is the city that is the primary location of the novels that China has written. And it seems an interesting enough city. It seems an interesting enough setting. It's got an interesting history to it. The article does get rather long and a little tedious, a little more of something that I would expect from a source book and less of what I would expect from a magazine It starts on page 22, and it ends on page 41. So it is a very long article, and if you're not interested in running a completely different setting, then it's not real interesting. I found it to be not real interesting. There were some neat ideas in there, but for the most part, not something that's ever going to be useful for me. They took up a lot of space in this magazine for something that is mostly useless to me. But it was an interesting source of some inspiration. Now, after that, they get into an article about the people of Boslog. And this is where I think their organization worked against them. Knowing nothing about the world and the setting, it would have made more sense to introduce me to the different races and monsters and what have you that exist in this world before you tell me about the geography and the government and the society and all that kind of stuff, because the history and the background and the setting makes a lot more sense to me when I know about the people already. Again, The People of Boslog is by Wolfgang Bauer, illustrated by Andrew Howe, and it introduces you to Cacticae, a giant cactus people, the Kepri, a female beetle-headed humanoid-like people, the Remade, a sort of half-human, half-machine, the Vodianoi, a water-loving amphibious race. And then it gets into Monsters of Boslog, again by Wolfgang Bauer, illustrated by Andrew Howe and John Gravato. And so then they introduce us to some of the monsters that you might run into in this world. The Anopheli, a mosquito-ish sort of monster. The Garuda, a winged hawk-like humanoid group of people. The Grindylo, a monstrous serpentine worm-like thing. The Handlinger, which is sort of this hand creature that attaches itself to people and takes control of bodies and what have you. The Scab Meddler, which on one hand is an incredibly disgusting concept, and on the other hand, the art on it looks really cool. The art alone has me interested in thinking, well, maybe this is a really cool concept. But it's a humanoid, basically, that has developed abilities and resistances and what have you by scarring up their bodies. The Slake Moth, giant insectoid creature. And the Weaver, spider-like creature. Wormen, which is a humanoid dragon-ish sort of thing. They tend to be pranksters. And that's the end of the information about Boslog. So we've gone from page 22 to page 61 with all information about that, about a setting. And honestly, I get a little bit of inspiration from it, but I'm probably not going to use any of that in any of my games, probably ever. It was more tedious than it was interesting. But again, I've never heard of the author before. I know nothing about the world and the setting. I've never read any of the books. Maybe if I had, it would have been more interesting to me. I don't know. But then it gets into the ecology section. The ecology of the Yrthak. And this was pretty cool. I enjoyed the ecology of the Yrthak. It gives you some of the physiology, the psychology. I found the advanced version very interesting. Usually when they give you sort of the advanced version of one of the monsters that they do an ecology of or in other books or whatever, I don't find it very useful or interesting this time. I thought it was really cool. The idea was that there's a giant Yrthak buried under the ground with a village that's actually sprung up around it. And the only thing showing on this Yrthak is its horn. And the horn sticks up out of the ground, and the people there have, the natives, I guess, have taken to believing that it's a mystic sort of totem. And they've carved all over it, and it hums to them every now and then, as a Yrthak horn would tend to do. The Ecology of the Yrthak article is by Eric Roloffs, illustrated by Peter Berkting. Then we get into the Savage Tidings article, Braving the Isle of Dread, by Nicholas Logue, illustrated by Ben Wooten. And this article is all about introducing you to the native tribes, the Ullmen, that exist on the Isle of Dread. And so you meet several of the different tribes that are there, the differences, what their specialties are. They give you some feats and some special weapons that you might run into or that you might use if you were affiliated with one of the tribes. And, of course, you get the new affiliation for the Ullmen tribes. And then they go on and again and explain to you how you might replace some PCs for the, I believe, third time in one of these articles, updating some of the affiliations from previous articles, and then give some information about some various monsters that you might run into, or some work that you might do, or some things that you might do to help out the colony that you're helping to establish on the Isle of Dread. Then we get into Forgotten Realms, Volo's Guide to the Forgotten Dead, by Brian Cortijo, with a special introduction by Ed Greenwood, illustrated by John Gravato. And here you get some specialized Forgotten Realms undead. Again, I really wish Ed Greenwood would take a stronger role in this article and that he would do more with it, because I love it when Ed Greenwood contributes to Dragon Magazine, but I guess I'll take the introduction. You get the Charnel Custodian, an undead creature that springs up out of graveyards. Fairly powerful there. You get the Inquisitor, a torture specialist undead creature. The Scuzz, this is what happens when somebody dies wrongly in a swamp, I guess. And so it's sort of a murky, swampy, goopy, undead thing. And then you get into Eberron article, Dragon Marks, Warforged, Fierce and Furious, by Nicholas Logue, introduction by Keith Baker, illustrated by John Hodgson. And this one is all about Warforged and getting some new ideas for Warforged and how to put them together, some new components that you could put into Warforged, some random body generators to put together a quick Warforged and to make them look unique and different with personality quirks and what have you. And then also a new affiliation, the Eldritch Crucible, which is a group of Warforged that banded together to try to make sure that in the future, magic and the implementation of magic would be used as a tool instead of a weapon like they were used during the last war. Then, of course, is Sage Advice with Andy Collins, illustrated by Andrew Howe. And this month, the Sage explores questions related to monsters, challenge ratings, and encounter level. So if you're having issues with that, take a look and see if he answers your question in there. Then we get into the Class Acts section. The Adventure article is called Criminal Specialist by Hal McLean, illustrated by Julie Dillon. And you get information about how to change your rogue into other more specialist types of rogues, complete with some prerequisites, skills that you know can now no longer take, and special abilities that you get at first at various levels. You have the Beggar, the Blackmailer, the Fence, the Goon, the Kidnapper, the Lookout, and the Pickpocket. So if you want to add a little more specialty to your rogue, there's some interesting ways to do it. Then you get, for Arcane, you have the Sorcerer's Guide by Amber E. Scott, illustrated by Julie Dillon. Once again, they've done a series of these now. This one is just sort of a quick summary of the kinds of things that you want to know about if you're going to play a sorcerer. Nothing new, not new information here, just sort of a quick cheat sheet for people who are playing a sorcerer. Under Divine, you have Aztec Mythos 1 by David Schwartz, illustrated by Julie Dillon. And basically, they're giving you the two main gods and some of the mythos for the Aztec pantheon in case you wanted to use those in your campaign setting. It looked interesting enough, and I enjoyed sort of the historical basis for it. So if you want to add sort of a Native American, Central American feel to your game, they've got some interesting information in there for you. For Warrior, you have the Burning Gauntlet Sisterhood by Richard Farisee, illustrated by Julie Dillon. And basically, they give you an organization here of women, and their big goal is to get rid of slaves, free slaves. And so you've got this sort of secretive group of warrior women who seek out other people to join their organization and specifically target missions to help end various forms of slavery. And then lastly, of course, we have the comics. And for this issue, I'm going to say that best comic of the bunch was Zagonia. So way to go, Zagonia. That I got a little bit of a chuckle out of that one. So next up, Dragon issue 353. Dragon Magazine issue 353, which they are calling their Outer Planes Extravaganza, which should be very interesting. As a big fan of outsiders in my games, I am definitely going to be looking very closely at what's going on. First up, in the first watch section of this episode, you have a new Forgotten Realms adventure coming out called Cormyr, The Tearing of the Weave, which is the first part of a three-part Forgotten Realms epic, they explain, involving Char and Sirik, and will take characters from 4th to 8th level. This looks really cool. It's not too often I get very excited about a new adventure. This one I'm probably going to buy. And I think the only other 3.5 adventure that I've bought was Ravenloft. So that says something. This looks really cool. Then is the Magic Item Compendium, if you want a rather exhaustive list of magic items from all kinds of sources. This is your catalog. This is your book. And then you've got your Dragonlance Chronicles, Dragons of Winter Night graphic novel, which is releasing this next month in March, with a full-color 192-page compilation of the graphic novels, which could be really, really cool. I'm kind of waiting to see what it's like when all of them come out, but maybe I'll start picking those up too. What else? Marvel Comics is doing a Gunslinger comic book series with Stephen King involved, something that hasn't really happened before. If you are interested in that, check out Marvel Comics. They mentioned that The Giant in the Playground, which is giantitp.com, the wonderful people who bring you The Order of the Stick, has added a new webcomic, Earthworld, which I've also been reading. It's interesting. It took a little while for me to really buy into it, and it's still sort of building. I'm still not quite sure if it's going to be good or if I'm going to get tired of it. But hopefully, they do a good job of keeping that up. So far, it's doing pretty well for me. They also mentioned that there's going to be a release of Fritz Lieber's Farford and the Grey Mouser stories that were made into a graphic novel through Dark Horse Comics by Mike Mignola and Howard Chaykin, and they're being collected in graphic novel format and being put out. So if you're interested in picking those up, they're a few years old. In 1991 they first put them out, but they're now being collected and put out as a graphic novel series, which might be an interesting way to look at it. I've never read the books. I've heard lots of good things about them, and maybe this will be my way to sort of figure out what it's all about. That'd be interesting. I might have to look at those too. And then lastly, they talk about the new Dungeons & Dragons Tactics, a PSP game, which actually looks really cool. And I don't own a PSP, and I'm probably not going to buy one just for this game. But I tell you, if this game was available in other formats, I would definitely pick it up. It's less of a role-playing, more of a strategy D&D game, combat game. It's sort of like D&D miniatures, I guess, for video games. Then we get into the real heart of the magazine. First up, The Demonomicon of Ygwilliv, Malkanthet, Queen of the Succubi, by James Jacobs, illustrated by Ava Witterman. This article, while long, was awesome. I love the Demonomicon of Ygwilliv articles that they put out, and it's been a long time since they've had one, and this one is great. My only complaint is that they should do these more often. First of all, you get stats for Malkanthet that isn't weak, like the stats were from the Fiendish Codex 1. You get a full CR-28 version of Malkanthet. You get a little bit of information about what she's all about, what her goals are, what her cult is like. Her cult largely makes up brothels and that kind of thing on the mortal realms. So you never know when you're going into a brothel or a whorehouse whether or not you're walking into a cult of Malkanthet or if it just happens to be a brothel. They explain a prestige class called Thrall of Malkanthet, which they do for most of the really powerful demons and fiends and what have you. And then they give you some information about her minions, the Radiant Sisters, which are sort of Lilitu, that were extra loyal and became more powerful than an average demon. And there's a certain number of them, and they serve Malkanthet in many different ways. And then also gives you information about the Incubus, which is sort of the male version of the Succubus. And then lastly, we finish off learning a little bit about Malkanthet's world, her realm, her layer of the Abyss, which is a really cool looking idea because she seems to have gone out of her way, Malkanthet, to make her world look like it's not part of the Abyss. It's sort of this nice place to go where things are relatively normal, but of course they're going to seduce you into all kinds of horrible things. Then, Multiple Dementia, A Guide to the Demiplanes by Todd Stewart with Oliver Diaz, illustrated by Julie Dillons. And this is just sort of a collection of information about new ideas for demiplanes. Demiplanes being the outer planar regions that were created, you know, little pocket dimensions, I guess, little places where powerful wizards or gods or powerful outsiders are sort of pulled together and created their own little pocket dimension. And so you get a collection of those, which look really sort of interesting. Demiplanes work really well in that most of the time they're going to be short little side trips where you can really mess with and play with reality, have things happening that normally would be completely not happening. But in this sort of a setting, using a demiplane, you can throw it in there and make it work. But you've got a place called the Black Abyss. You've got Moyle, the city that waits, and some other things in there. It looks like an interesting little jaunt into the demiplanes. Not without being real long and lengthy and overwhelming. Then you get Princes of Elemental Good, The Arcomentals Part 2 by Eric Jansing and Kevin Boss, illustrated by Andrew Howe, which again is a nice counter to the Arcomentals that we got from earlier about Princes of Elemental Evil, and at the same time has me a little confused because it doesn't exactly fit in since they called this the Outer Planar Extravaganza, and Elemental Princes would be living on the inner planes, not the outer planes, but maybe that's a technicality that most people don't care about. But you get information and stats about the various elemental good princes, and as somebody who's playing in a game where we're running the Temple of Elemental Evil, I continue to be very interested in what this is all about, because I don't have a lot of background with the Elemental Evil stories and all that kind of stuff. So you get a little bit of their goals and their tactics and what these various princes are all about to sort of balance out the Elemental Evil princes that seem to be more well-known, more popular. Then you get The Ecology of the Keeper by Todd Stewart, illustrated by Peter Bergting. And you get some information about these mysterious humanoid creatures called Keepers. Their overall goal seems to be hiding knowledge, keeping secrets away from people. Looks really interesting. I vaguely remember reading something about the Keepers, but this is not a race. I've never used them in a game, and I have no idea what book they're from, so I'll be interested in getting all kinds of more information about the Keepers when I look at this article. But you get some information about what their goals are, what their history is, what their physiology is like, because they're, despite being humanoid and looking very human, they physiologically work very different. And then, of course, you get your Advanced Keeper, because they always give you an advance. Then we get our Savage Tidings article called Advancing the Wyvern by Jason Bowman, illustrated by Ben Wooten. And this one is about how to take the boat that you're using, the Sea Wyvern, and upgrading it, making it better. They've got mundane upgrades, they've got some magical upgrades, they've got some information about how to improve the way things work by hiring crew members, people to work on it. And then they give you a short little side note here about, once again, replacement PCs, because every article they give you information about how to get replacement PCs. And then they also tell you a little bit about what you know about what's underneath the Isle of Dread. Then we get into Volo's Guide, Outsiders of the Forgotten Realms, by Thomas M. Costa, with special introduction by Ed Greenwood, illustrated by Ramon Perez. This looks really cool. I love the Forgotten Realms, and I love Outsiders, so of course I really like the idea of Outsiders of the Forgotten Realms. You start off with the Celestial Harmonious Choir of the Words, which is a good, small outsider. They're incorporeal, and they deal a lot with the magic of words. You have the Silver Celestial, a new type of celestial. These are females that are sort of equal parts fire and moonlight, and they're made to serve Selune, the goddess of the moon. There's the Death Devil Fiend, which is sort of this, I don't know, it seems to have a pterodactyl-like head, four arms, bat-like wings, and carrying a scythe and a whip. And these are the kinds of fiends that you're probably going to find on the Fugue Plane. They're more often known as Tormentors of the Faithless and False. So these are the fiends that you're going to find running around in the Fugue Plane, torturing people who couldn't decide which god they were going to follow and ended up in sort of that limbo. You've got the Umbral Gloom Fiend, which are servitors of Shar, who are all about reminding people about the power of loss. Shar would often use them to punish people. They're often summoned. It says that Mask has actually subjugated or stolen away a few of these creatures. But all in all, this creature seems to be to Shar what the Yokel are to Loth. So that's cool. If you've got a lot of Shar worshippers in your game, this is the way to go. Eberron, Dragon Marks, Manifestly Strange by Amber E. Scott. Introduction by Keith Baker, illustrated by John Hodgson. And what you're getting here is a series of Eberron locations that have been messed up or are really strange or seem to have some sort of magic associated to them or have been altered by magic or how it affects people's skills. So you've got these three different locations that are sort of odd little things, and you never quite know what's going to happen there because they're sort of locations of legend. You've got the Vantaran Hot Springs, which are hot springs in the middle of a tundra. You've got the Ivory Mountain, which are stuck in the jungles of Kabara. This plateau sticks out of the middle of the jungle. And you've got the ruins of Pelmarine, which is a ruins of a castle by the Demon Waste and the Badlands and that sort of area that has this strange sort of, you know, you're surrounded by this horrible evil wasteland, and you've got this relatively peaceful location here stuck in the middle of it where this castle used to be. Sage Advice by Andy Collins, illustrated by Andrew Howe. And this month, the sage explores a variety of questions dealing with the planes of existence, their denizens, and various effects related to both. So that fits in very well. He's obviously been saving up questions about outsiders for a while. Class X. The adventure section is called Spell Thief Substitutions by Owen K.C. Stevens, illustrated by Mark Simonetti. And you basically have a series of different replacement abilities for the Spell Thief class. If you're using the Spell Thief class, which I haven't seen a lot of, it's from, but The Spell Thief class concept seems interesting to me. As I recall, it's from, I think, Complete Adventure. I'd have to double check on that, but I think off the top of my head it's from Complete Adventure. I know it's from one of the Complete books. And I'm not sure that I necessarily need a lot of replacement abilities to make my Spell Thief more specialized and more unique, since Spell Thief as a non-core class is already pretty unique and relatively unused. I don't know that I need to make it even more unique. I think I would have rather they focus on something else, but it does look really cool, and I'm always interested in that replacement concept, the substitution concept for classes. Under Arcane, you have Spells Without SR by Eric Jansing, illustrated by Mark Simonetti. And this is literally just a list of spells with a quick summary, just like you would see in the player's handbook, only they're only giving you spells to which spell resistance doesn't have an effect. So if you're a sorcerer or a wizard going up against something with spell resistance, here's a big long list of spells that you want to check out because your enemy won't get to use their spell resistance against it. The Divine article is No Turning by Jonathan Drain, illustrated by Mark Simonetti. And you basically have a whole long list of level or of class substitutions where you get rid of turning or rebuking undead, and you get a whole bunch of more options for something that you could have instead of it. There's Cultist, there's Evangelist, there's Fanatic, there's Healer, there's Justicar, there's Mystic, Relic Hunter, Sage, Scribe, Shaman, Theologian, Wanderer, Warrior Priest, Weapon Master. All of those are each individually different ways to replace turning undead or rebuking undead and getting something new instead. So that looks like a really interesting way to make your cleric really unique. Take away one of those features of cleric that you consider to be sort of standard and make something really different out of it. For warrior, you have Fighter Guide by Amber E. Scott, illustrated by Mark Simonetti. And once again, Amber E. Scott has given us a quick summary of what it takes to be a fighter with some quick rules, some quick charts to help us out. Again, if you're sort of new to the game or you haven't played very many fighters, then this is a great sort of cheat sheet to help you not hold the game up. And lastly, of course, we have the comics. This time around, I'm giving best comic of the issue to, I'm going to go Dork Tower. It's very wordy, but as somebody who is certified to teach political science, this is really, really funny. They've put together a document called the Lake Geneva Conventions about what a DM can and cannot do. And then they actually offer to have people suggest new additions to the Lake Geneva Conventions. I'd be really interested in seeing how that all pans out. So all the comics this time around were actually very hilarious. I liked them all, but I'm going to go Dork Tower, even though it is a little bit wordy. So all in all, two more great issues of Dragon Magazine. Probably went a little bit longer than a normal episode because I did two magazines at once. At the same time, though, I did use a very different format, a different preparation style for these magazines. Normally, I will do these just one issue at a time, and it will be half as long as this one is right now. So let me know what you think. Is this format better? Is it not as good? Would you rather have me be more in-depth? Doing this format, honestly, I can probably get an episode out even faster after I get the issue. So keep that in mind, but let me know what you think. Both issues were worth the price. Issue 353 about the Outer Planes and Outsiders was definitely worth the price. The other one, a little less so, but that's largely because I have very little interest in what China Mevel is doing. As usual, you can contact me at thetomeshow@gmail.com, or you can check out the website at http://thetome.podbean.com. Give me some feedback, send me a guest review. Also, keep your ears open and wait for something new coming out. I am working on some possible crossovers with some other podcasters out there, so look out for that. Thanks for joining me once again. This has been episode 10, Dragon Issues 352 and 353 of The Tome.